Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Institute for Personal Development, Kriya Yoga Ashram, where total consciousness is the new frontier.
Kriya Yoga is union of the individual with the divine. Join us as we explore the practices to initiate this process.
Good morning. Welcome to the Voice of Yoga. Let's Talk Consciousness. I am your hostess, Lisa Winton, and with me is Kenny Toy, also known as Swami Jayananda, founder of the Institute for Personal Development, located here in Hampton, New Hampshire. Good morning, Swami. Thank you for being here today. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing pretty good today. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good today, too. Thanks for asking. And we want to thank you all for tuning in. Today on The Voice of Yoga, we will talk about seeing and visions along with the various differences that are possible. In this show, we will classify psychic vision as awareness of mortal sense and spiritual vision as awareness of immortal sense. What most of us call love is really fear. Listen as Swami explains the distinction between fear and love. Welcome to The Voice of Yoga. We are talking consciousness. Join the Kriya Yoga Spiritual Advance to get the light in your soul and experience unconditioned love. Swami, I see the title of the show that you have today is The Difference Between Psychic and Spiritual Visions. So I guess we should just get right to it. What are the main differences between psychic and spiritual visions?
Well, again, I like to preface what we're doing here because it's really our way of being able to communicate what it is that we're talking about. These terms can be used by anybody and to mean anything. In this model, a psychic vision is one that has appearance in time and space. And it is merely a thought about a thought. And because the appearance is in time and space, it is a mortal thought. Again, in this model, all finite appearances are mortal thoughts made visible and are unreal. And a psychic vision can be put in finite terms. Now, a spiritual vision is one that has no appearance or limits, and it is eternal. Spirit speaks in the absolute, and so spirit is in absolute terms and cannot be divided into rational terms. Spirit is whole, perfect, unchanging, invisible, and intangible to mortal sense. What we're trying to do is make a distinction between whether you're getting your information from mortal thought or you are getting it from divine mind, which is an important thing that we want to be able to differentiate between. Because it's very easy to think that you are spiritual and not be under the government of spiritual law.
So if I think I'm having a psychic vision, or I'm talking to somebody else who has given me psychic information, and if that information doesn't have a win-win outcome for everybody, then chances are that's probably not a spiritual vision. It is a psychic vision from this material world, from mortal mind.
Right. And this is what we've been talking about, is being able to use the testimony of the senses, not as a reality in and of itself or as of something that is real, but as an appearance. It gives us clues as to what it is that we are holding in consciousness. Because to the best of my understanding, we can either be individualized from world mind, mortal mind, or we can be individualized from divine mind. The difference between the two is that mortal mind is finite. You're in time and space, and typically, I really like what Herb Fitch says about this, that you cannot live in time. that in time, all we can really do is die because we are in a false sense of existence. And the only place that we can live is in spiritual truth because spirit is immortal and spirit is self-existent. Spirit is the power of this universe. Now, it's very easy to think that we are spiritual because we still have the appearance of being alive. But at the same time, we could be sowing to the flesh as opposed to being established in spiritual identity, living out from eternal life, living out from our immortality, from the changeless state of being.
Well, I think that is something that we would all would like to do, but it, at the same time, it's probably a frightening proposition for most of us because we don't really know what that's going to be like. How do we know that that is so much different than what we think? If we're having a good life now, well, how can it be any better?
Well, that's why I think we included that concept. We want to talk about love and fear. Because fear is really a defense mechanism for this false sense of existence. Instinct, appetite, preservation, survival really relies on a belief in matter, that we think that we are a finite being, that we think life is in this physical form. And so we're in the trap. Whatever it is that we're experiencing while we're in this identity, we're under the law of karma, which is basically the law of reciprocity, that whatever it is that we put out, we get back. Fear becomes the limit, that we do not move beyond this fear. And so, like you said, most of us are afraid to move beyond the testimony of our senses. And the reason is because if we assume spiritual identity, it will dissolve the false sense of existence. The reason is because false sense relies on belief for its existence. Because we react to the testimony of our senses, we keep this false cycle active. That's how it survives, is because we believe it. But it's not self-existent. It doesn't have a power in and of itself. And that's why we say it isn't real. But fear becomes a huge barrier. And then, like we had said in the opening, there's a big difference between what we call love. Because what most of us call love on this sense level of existence is really fear. Things that we are attracted to, things that we try to protect and preserve and defend, it's all based on a belief that you can lose them. Whereas the spiritual sense of love is absolute. There is no fear when you have the understanding that you are eternal, that you are the expression of an indestructible principle.
I think love is one of those words that's just used for everything. I love the beach. I love sunny days. And I think we've gotten to that point where now the word love doesn't really have the true meaning that it should have.
Well, the thing is that love should be equated with spiritual identity in its absolute form. That's the divine idea of the term. Most of us don't really have any point of reference as to associate with absolute love. So we want to really kind of use what our understanding of that is. But like you say, if you're always living in superlatives and everything based on your human judgment is elevated to that level, then it loses its potency.
Right, I can see that. So you talked about being on this karmic wheel, how can we jump off the wheel? What do we have to do in this lifetime to not have to repeat?
Yeah. In order to get out from underneath the cycle of death and rebirth, we must know the truth. We have to know that we are an eternal spiritual being. And that becomes your principle. And then you also have to be able to accept spiritual identity. What that means is that we have to reject the false sense of existence. We have to reject sense-level living, which, like we said, because of fear, becomes a very big obstacle. Because who wants to jump out of a perfectly good airplane? And that's why, under this law of karma, we have good karma and we have bad karma. We have good times and then we have bad times. And it's very difficult for us to want to separate from the good times. So when we're in this trough of sense level living and things aren't going our way, becomes a huge opportunity for us to jump ship. And that's typically when most of us get what is commonly referred to as spiritual. And then we succumb to whatever rules and suggestions that we are given until things might turn around and things start to get good, and then we get off again. But in order for us to work out our own salvation, we really have to know this truth. And we have to know that spirit is the only life in this universe.
Well, I know you've been saying all along that spirit or God is in everyone and everything. No matter what you look at, we have to look at that as being spirit. And that might be a tough call for a lot of us to, you know, look at a computer screen and say, well, that's spirit, or look at that shelf, that's spirit. Now, the more we do that, does that condition us to be more receptive to what the information that you're giving us?
Well, I think what it does is it conditions you not to react. Because if this is a spiritual universe and there is only one life and its absolute goodness, its absolute harmony, its absolute love, then there is never anything to fear and there's no longer anything to react to. But in order to do that, you have to pierce through the testimony of your five senses, because the appearance may not necessarily have those divine qualities. And it's our fidelity to the divine idea, to the truth, this is a spiritual universe, and holding our attention on that, independent of the five sense testimony, actually has a profound effect on that external appearance.
But what if I say to you, well, I want to be that spiritual person, but I still want to live in the world. I'm enjoying my life, but I still want to be spiritual. How do I make that connection?
Well, you can't. You can't be a human in spiritual identity. It would be like saying, I really like darkness, but I love the light. So how can I have the light and darkness? Because the light dispels darkness and the truth dispels the error. So the minute that you have accepted or identified with the truth, then it destroys the false sense of existence, the false belief that we started out with.
Well, I think this is a good place to pause to hear a word from our sponsors. So listeners, we'll be back with you in just a few moments.
Kriya Yoga Theory 1, Human Development and the Eight Essential Stages of Kriya Yoga. This program is a comprehensive course that will help you get your arms around the science of Kriya Yoga. It provides a clear understanding of the goals and objectives behind yoga, along with the physics of spirituality. It includes the practices, supportive concepts of Kriya Yoga, and the process in human development, apotheosis, the process of the human becoming divine. A complete guide on how to become a human in the adult state. Get the light in your soul and experience the simplicity and joy of union with the divine. This course is available in live classes at the ashram or online with 8 videos or 4 CDs. Visit our website, www.ipdtransform.com, for more information.
Welcome back. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to The Voice of Yoga, and we are talking consciousness. So, Swami, last week in one of our asana classes, we had a discussion with some students, and we were talking about terms, and we were talking about using the word God, spirit, and I guess we were having some problems really understanding, well, what is divine mind? Is that the same thing? And how is that different from the void? Can you shed some light on that as to what we talked about?
I really like what Mary Baker Eddy did when she assigned 7 words to define or represent God, which was spirit, soul, mind, truth, principle, love, and life. And so the more that you start to find internal representation for whatever word you want to use, because spirit is, and like you had said, it's the void. It's the invisible, intangible presence. But it is the void, the nothing, out of which everything comes, and it is omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscience. It is the intelligence of this entire universe. It is the life of this entire universe. You really can't get your 5-sense mind around that. You really have to start to cultivate spiritual sense.
So you mean by cultivating it, that's kind of like, to me, it's like planting the seed and then you have to feed and water it and then watch it grow and harvest. So what does that look like to you?
Again, I like to use the Bible, where the Bible calls feeding the sheep, where you're actually filling your human mind with these divine attributes, spiritual ideas. And by doing that, provided that you start out by letting go of a belief in matter, letting go of your material moorings, and you start filling your consciousness with these divine aspirations, it makes your thought more buoyant. It raises your consciousness till you get to the level where you can start to see things differently. You start to perceive things on a spiritual level, piercing through the testimony of your 5 senses. Then you begin to forsake all of this human thinking for divine knowing, that you know that you are the expression of this indestructible principle. You are an eternal spiritual being. You're forever held, controlled, and governed by the divine law. That raising of consciousness is what lifts you out of the law of karma.
So you had said earlier about the psychic vision is one that has the appearance in time and space, and then you went on to say that it is really deriving from mortal thought, which we know obviously is our material world. I know that we can get caught up in these psychic visions. We seem to be enamored with trying to find these visions of the future. But we can do that with spiritual vision. And isn't the information that we get from these spiritual visions much more profound and not really entertainment, but really can be life-changing?
Well, again, spirit has power, whereas psychic vision, at its very best, relies on belief. And like you're saying, what benefit did you get from, quote unquote, knowing the future? Because you're in time. You're at the level of consciousness that means that you have accepted your mortality. To be spiritual means that you must reject mortality and you must accept immortality, which to me is the upgrade. You can get a psychic vision that may help you make a decision on a physical, mortal level. But at the very best, what you'll be able to do with that is change finite bad to finite good, because you're not making this vertical leap into the divine law of life and out of this hypnotic state of karma.
So we have to turn our attention into being spiritually minded. I don't want to use the word try, but have spiritual thoughts to enable us to take this vertical leap, to go up an octave or two.
Right. And then once we start to rise and we start to attune ourselves to the presence of divine mind, which is thinking in the absolute. See, the rational mind can only do one thing at a time. So when you're in the lower mind or the mid mind, you're really working with a very limited mental function. You can move into the higher mind, which can do many things at once. Like the part of your mind that is controlling your heart rate, your blood pressure, your body temperature. That would be considered the higher mind. It gives the appearance of having advancement over the lower and the mid-mind. But it's really more of a lateral movement because you are still getting your information on a sense level of life. You're still in duality. You're still in the false sense of existence. Now, divine mind thinks in the absolute. The divine mind can do everything at once. So in divine mind, there's no past, there's no present, there's no future. It is just the eternal now. And it is doing everything at once. It is everywhere simultaneously at once. And it's doing it perfectly.
I know you were saying that what we call love is really attachment to this material sense. But how do we go from that understanding that love is life eternal without a beginning or end? So who are we? Where are we in all of this?
Well, to answer your question, if this divine principle is all, if spirit is all, then there is no you and me. That is the false sense, because we're identifying with the reflection. The way that it kind of works is that if you were to look at yourself in the mirror, the image that was in the mirror would have the appearance of being alive. It would have the appearance of being what you think you are. But we know that there is no life in that image. It's just a reflection. That scenario is really just a microcosm of the relationship between the human and the divine, because the human is the divine reflection. It would be like you trying to live from the image in the mirror. You would eventually find that you had no power. So for us to identify with this physical form, which is just a reflection of the divine, it is a thought about what is really here, then we find that we don't have the power, that the reflection relies on belief. And as long as we believe that we're a mortal creature, then we remain in that limited sense of who we are.
So I want to get back to the discussion that we had in that Asana class last week, and we talked about Well, then what is the purpose for our physical bodies? What should we be using our physical bodies for? I mean, if they're not really real, why do we have them?
Well, the body is what gives us clues about what we are holding in consciousness. And as long as that is what we're using it for, then of course it becomes a useful tool. Because you can't be in an adverse condition and still be in the truth of your being. So things like sin, sickness, suffering, discord give us clues that we have a belief in something other than this one divine life, this one divine principle.
Now, you had mentioned those seven words that Mary Baker Eddy used for words to mean God. I want to focus on life and love. So how do we know that we've actually have experienced this love and this life?
Again, by the fruits, by what is going on in your external experience. Are you experiencing harmony and peace and tranquility, or are you struggling? Is there a lot of violence and sickness and suffering in your external experience? We're working with the principle that spirit is all and spirit is perfect. What is before us is a reflection or a thought about what it is that we have in our consciousness. Then the clue there would be to change how we think. And what we're talking about here is we must forsake all the human thinking for the divine knowing. And the reason being is that it is the divine principle that has the authority to maintain the perfection of being.
So I want to make this connection to this divine mind. I know now from the past shows that we've done that I can't just pray. How do I go about getting that assistance?
Yeah, divine law doesn't function against us as evil, nor does it function for us as good. That would be the law of karma. But divine law can only function as us in perfect harmony with itself. We really have to let divine mind take over the scientific government of our being. And in the framework of trusting divine presence, then we let it live us and we let it lead us to the perfection of being.
We have to stop the fear, because it sounds like that's where everything comes from. And then once we get past the fear, then we can become attuned to this new sense of love.
Right. But you also have to be very careful in how you go about getting past the fear. C.S. Lewis wrote, "Perfect love, we know, casts out fear, but so do several other things: ignorance, alcohol, passion, presumption, and stupidity. It is very desirable that we should all advance to that perfection of love in which we shall fear no longer. But it is very undesirable until we have reached that stage that we should allow any inferior agent to cast out fear." We really want to assume spiritual identity. That it is this perfect love, this divine presence, that our knowledge of it will dissolve this false sense of who we are. And in the dissolving of the false sense, then there's no longer anything to protect, because we are now an eternal spiritual being.
Well, thank you. I guess it's about that time that we have to start closing down our show for this morning. So listeners, be sure to visit the website, www.ipdtransform.com. A lot of tools on the website that you can click on to further your spiritual developments. Click on the online classes tab so you can access Swami's free webinar that he does on Wednesdays at noon. And three quarters of the way down on the homepage, you'll see a section entitled Swami Says Recent Posts. And you'll see a bunch of the Blog Talk Radio shows there that you can click on. So with that, Swami, do you have any other final thoughts about today's program?
Well, I would like to encourage everybody to rely on their spiritual vision and to come out of any unnecessary belief in fear that they might have, and to use these insights to help them stay in the spirit of the truth of their being. Namaste.
And thank you for listening to our program, The Voice of Yoga. This is Lisa Winton with Swami Jayananda signing off. Have a wonderful Kriya Yoga kind of day. Namaste.